Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Sketch Reporters Assemble!
Chase Thomas Podcast. The Chase Thomas Podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, you heard it. The Sports Reporters, they have assembled. We're all back. The gang's all back. Andrew Hammond of Detroit Free Press, newly in the East Coast time zone. Andrew, good morning, sir. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. I'm super excited for Euro 2020, aka Euro 2020 plus one. And I thought games started at noon. They actually started at 3 o'clock. So I'm still trying to get used to the Eastern time zone, which it's, hey, let's wait all day for sports. Boo.
It really is quite the burden. It's very difficult.
I've told the lady, I'm like, I don't know if I've ever really been all that in on the West Coast life, moving to the West Coast, but for sports and for this career, like, I don't know why anyone who has the opportunity to go West Coast, like, just being done with the NBA by 7 o'clock sounds delightful. Like, just having it all done and having your night still ahead of you. I don't know.
It seems delightful. And what's funny is it's like 10 o'clock, like, if it's like super, super late. Like, what was the World Series in 2018? They had like a 17 inning game, and I mean, it was like 1 o'clock, and I'm like, oh, this is, I'm completely fine, but I felt terrible for people on the East Coast for a little
bit. One of my favorite niche Twitter moments, and this is absolutely probably something only a complete weirdo and pervert like me would enjoy, is that whenever
you, Bob, a pervert? No.
Yeah. Anytime there are late election returns rolling in and you see all of these election legitimate, like, you know, politics reporters talking about having to order pizza to the office and stay up till 3 a.m. to file the results, et cetera, invariably a swarm of beat guys come strolling onto the timeline going, oh, really? Having to file late at night? Wow, while eating garbage food. That sounds like something I would never have to deal with as a part of my day-to-day work experience, you coddled little babies. Anyway, they get very snooty about it, and I enjoy it all the time.
Hey, one of the
highlights of the 2011 NBA lockout was Howard Beck tweeting photos of the pizzas that he got.
Yes.
To the negotiating sessions at the Hilton in Midtown. And they were just very, very disturbing non-pizza looking pizzas. And if you search the hashtag mutant pizza, you could still see a couple of the photos that Howard Beck posted a decade ago.
I have a bone to pick with Howard Beck, guys.
What is it?
Why?
Okay. So
he's a lovely man.
No, about this take. I don't know Howard personally. I'm saying this tweet that he sent out. Okay. Did y'all see this? I think it was last night.
I don't know what he said.
Eric Name quoted, or he said, in case it isn't clear on the broadcast, that is a fuck KD chant in Pfizer forum. And then Howard quote tweeted it and said, this is an alarming trend. Howard.
I don't know if I'd call it alarming. He's clutching a pearl or two.
I was also like, Howard, have you been in a... Have we all forgotten what sports was like before the pandemic? I was at a Tennessee baseball game when it was 25% capacity in February, freezing my ass off. There was a man 20 feet away from me screaming at the top of his lungs, cussing out the umpire for a solid 7 innings. Like, this is what, this is not an alarming trend. This is how it's always been. What are we talking about? Like, this is how it's always been. And I would say it's been worse in the past.
Oh, yeah. It's, you know how we kind of eased back into sports, like for college football, everything was like, quote unquote, 25 to 35% capacity, not in the South because COVID, for some reason, did not exist south of the Mason-Dixon line.
It didn't because of the weather.
That's
I read
right.
that on, like Sam Darnold, I read about that on Facebook.
Nice. But no, like, watching all of these crowds act a damn fool, I'm like, y'all, like, can we have sports not come back fully? Like, can we just, I feel like we need to, like, put people on punishment for bad fan behavior.
I was interested in this, and, like, you know, Howard Bryant was actually talking about this with Howard Beck about, Howard Bryant, the writer for ESPN, about how, like, there have been a number of fan crossing the line incidents, particularly in the NBA during the playoffs. Just not good things. Not, right. you know, even yelling rude things or yelling that Trae Young is balding or something like
that. That was actually kind of funny.
That was fun. That was funny. I thought it was weird when they started calling him Eve Fartlow, but, you know... New Yorkers are very savvy to local media trends. In any case...
Wait, Bob, did the Knicks or the Hawks advance in that series?
I don't know. I'm not a basketball fan.
Okay.
In any case... yeah, and what Howard Bryant was saying, and you can read, I believe he's either tweeted about it or written a story. He may not have written a story. He may have been on a podcast talking about it. But in any case, you can get his take rather than my bolterized version, is that there is a certain resentment that has built up in fans because a lot of the very, very cautious social justice activism that took place during the bubble. And that, like, spitting on a player or throwing a beverage at a player is to a certain degree a backlash against the, again, by my interpretation, very cautious kinds of activism that we saw for the most part during the pandemic. I don't know if I agree. I don't disagree that there are a large section of fans who will both A, still pay to go to a game, and B, are really cheesed off by friendly slogans on the back of uniforms enough to, like, huck a heavy object at a player. That feels like a small Venn diagram to me. I do think people have forgotten what it's like to be in a crowd and they're getting hopped up on adrenaline and the excitement of being packed to a building with other people again. And it's making some of their inhibitions drop. Now, whether some of the feelings underneath those that would normally be inhibited are coming out, that's the point that that's where I might agree with him. But I really just think it's going to take us some time, as you were saying, to reacclimate ourselves to being at a mass event. I know, look, I went to watch the Warriors Grizzlies play-in game in a bar, on the inside of a bar. And it was almost more sensory information than I could take in. It was very exciting and fun. I can't imagine what it would be like to be in a hyped arena for not like a Knicks-Hawks game, because, like, as I stated previously, not a basketball game I care about or have deep-seated emotional attachments to. But, you know, some sporting event would probably send me over the moon, and I might do something very stupid as a result of that.
I mean, I was able to troll a Philadelphia family for a solid 2 hours on vacation on
Sunday.
Oh, good
Lord, of course you did.
It was incredible.
Did you keep saying "water" at them? Did
no.
you make, did you make Mayor of Easttown jokes? Well, how did you troll them?
Well,
are they
was,
from Delco?
It was during the Sixers-Hawks game last Sunday.
Thank you, Bob. I know you laughed at that.
I did. I can't get into Mayor of Easttown. It's just too depressing.
I
need
sorry. To watch, I'm on vacation and I need to, I think I might like just go ahead and, cause I'm actually headed down to, cause I was supposed to go to Atlanta, but plans changed and I'm actually going to be headed to Dallas. I want to say either, Sunday or Monday. And so I think I might watch a few episodes on the flight down.
I don't mind the pace. It is very slow moving. I can handle things with a very languid pace, like any David Lynch Helm TV show ever.
From David Lynch?
I love David Lynch. David Lynch whips ass.
I was saying, is it from David Lynch?
No.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
No, not at all. I'm just saying, pace-wise, it's Kyle Anderson speed is what I'm saying. It takes its time. And that's normally fine. It's just very bleak. It is grim stuff, man.
Okay.
It is not a leisurely entertainment experience.
Is that kind of like the Jason Bateman HBO show that I've...
It's the same palette. It's the same color tones as Ozark, which I also have not watched.
I kind of got that vibe.
Do you like gray? Do you like a slightly bluer gray? How about a brownish gray?
I lived in Seattle for 2.5 years. Mm. Like, yeah.
That was when you were in the Chaz with Antifa.
Clearly. No, I like to call Seattle really like Pacific Northwest, like gray sky. Like, it's just Baltic Depression. Like, okay. Northwest.
Pennsylvania Depression is its own thing. I mean, I went to college outside Philly, and that's not, it's a little too bougie and manicured lawns to be the real hardcore gray Pennsylvania stuff. So clearly, like, for all the real Pennsylvania heads out there, I do not know what I'm talking about, but a Pennsylvania winter is just Eastern Detroit in terms of the vibe.
I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not disagreeing or anything, but I'm just like, yeah, like, I feel like that Pennsylvania, that Pennsylvania more veering towards Jersey type of grayness, and like the Pacific Northwest grayness, and probably Detroit grayness. Like,
I haven't checked, but I believe this is Western Pennsylvania. So we're talking like closer to Pennsylvania and Michigan and things.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes sense, because it feels like, yeah, it's like, yeah. Because I feel like Eastern Pennsylvania is a bit more, where the mayor of Easttown takes place, it feels like it's more, you know, they look a little more refined. Let's just say that.
Okay. That's fair.
Well, that actually...
How did you troll the Philly fans?
Oh, yeah, no. Because I don't know if you saw game one. The Hawks blew Philadelphia out. And
I'm going to say it for another time. Hopefully the last. Not a basketball fan. I have no idea.
I threw up a lot of threes. I did
the
kickoff.
No. Wow, Easttown. It's actually right. It's. I was entirely wrong where Easttown is. It is like Jersey, Eastern Pennsylvania.
It's depression. Oh, so it's even more depression. Okay, yeah.
Would rather talk about anything other than my experience trolling Philadelphia fans and the Hawks.
It's a good like 6 hours away from where I went to college. It's not that far at all. Sorry, no, 6 miles. 6 miles from where I went to college. Not that far at all. I know this stuff. I am practically a goddamn native at this point.
Mm.
Bob of Easttown.
Bob of Easttown. There you go. This naturally leads us to the NBA playoffs. Andrew, what has been your favorite series thus far?
Good question. Honestly, everything in the West. Like, I'm really fascinated to see how, and a little bit in the East too, but I'm very fascinated in this wide open, any team can win, just vibe that the Western half of the playoff has. Because, you know, it's a short season, and it reminds me of 99 when they had the lockout, and where it was basically just so everybody's so evenly matched, so you can kind of throw the seeds out the window, and in a way you can kind of throw the seeds out the window here. I am such a fan of what this Utah team is doing, what the Suns are doing, and just I knew the Suns had something special last year in the bubble, where basically it was like, hey, you're going to play seven games. You're probably not going to make the playoffs, because I'm pretty sure at that point they were already locked out of the playoffs, but it was basically for draft positioning and all of that. But they were super, super impressive in their time during the bubble, and I remember like thinking distinctively, like, oh, this team is going to, like, give them a year or two. And then they add Chris Paul. And then it's like, holy crap, like, this team is this team could reach and possibly win the finals. So, no, I'm super excited about pretty much everything in the West. The East, man, it's
It's the Hawks to lose.
It's so weird, because I can definitely see a Nets-Hawks Eastern Conference Finals. Like, I can see it happening. At the same time, it feels like Brooklyn can just roll the ball out, because Milwaukee is inconsistent. And
frauds. Milwaukee is frauds.
I look at Milwaukee. I look at Milwaukee, and because, you know, being a Celtics fan, I paid little to no attention, because I knew that, okay, yeah, this team, this, you know, their window of contention has closed, burn it down, start all over. So I'm very interested in seeing, you know, what Philly can do, what Atlanta can do. But it's just it's really a three-team race there, because congratulations, Milwaukee, you win game one, or you win game three. Yeah, no, that series is still probably going to go five. So, yeah, really just I love everything on the western half of the playoff bracket, and the East, and I'm trying to warm up to it.
I would push back against the seeding, throwing the seeds out, because that was something that was talked about a lot with the Lakers being a bottom seed, what the Grizzlies did early on in that Jazz series, and you look up and down the list of like all the different ones across, and people were talking to themselves, oh, could this be a thing? And it's like, well, the Hawks are the only team of any seed below a four to advance in the next round, and it looks like the Suns and the Jazz are going to advance 1-2. And it's tied 1-1, so we'll see what happens with the Sixers and Hawks tonight. But the Nets still in good position as a 2 seed to move on. Like, it is playing out just like if you were a top 4 seed, you have the best chance of moving on. If you're a top 2 seed, you have the best chance of moving on to the finals. Like, it's just I think it's actually played out less parity-wise than I think a lot of people foresaw. Because remember that Pelton piece before the playoffs got started of, like, the fact that the 7 and 8 seeds had a real shot at beating the 1-2 seed, and this is a really rare thing in the West, and then neither thing happens, and here we are. Like, this is just the Jazz and Suns appear to be on a collision course. I'm not writing up the Clippers just yet, but I will say
frauds.
It's not looking good. I don't know. I don't know. I can't do the Clippers
frauds
yet. Frauds.
What did I? If you want to remember from way back in 2 weeks ago, what was my prediction for the finals?
I don't know, Bob. You don't like basketball, and you're not a basketball fan whatsoever.
Which is why I can dispense with all emotion and make a rational, reasoned choice. Mm-hmm. I told you 2 weeks ago on this very podcast it was going to be nuts against the Sens. That was my pick. He said spoonerizing for no reason at all. Nets Suns. This is the best chance Chris Paul is going to have to win a championship. The Nets are going to roll. The Hawks are going to dispatch with Philly soon enough. Nets Hawks is going to be good. Nets in six, same thing. Suns Jazz will be fun, but Suns in five, probably maybe six, and then Nets in six in the finals. That's my marker. I'm laying it down. The favorite thing for me was watching LeBron just eat a pile of dirt. That was fun.
You know, okay, so I hate defending LeBron like this. I hate defending, not more defending the Lakers, but more kind of like, isn't this what we all saw coming? Like,
yeah, I mean, like, look, the Lakers, look, the LeBron had to deal with injuries. He had zero time to recuperate after the bubble season. The replacements that they got for the supporting cast that they had were not. No, boy, Montrezl Harrell, sixth man of the year, Montrezl Harrell really, really went downhill. They missed playoff Rondo. They missed Danny Green. They missed those guys who were a big help in the playoffs. And Anthony Davis just could not turn it on all year. He was never the same player as he was in the 2020.
It was a roster that it's like, oh, the wildly inconsistent team that hasn't been able to gel all season long. Huh, it turns out they're wildly inconsistent in the playoffs, and in a game seven, basically just kind of encompassed their entire season in 48 minutes. Like, people were bagging on LeBron. I'm just like,
no, there's no need to bag on him. Like, the reasons why he lost were totally understandable and rational. He is in his, crikey, what is this, his 18th year?
Yeah.
And, you know, and, like, logging, not counting all of the extra games he logged in the playoffs. Like, of course he was going to have something less than a stellar chance of, you know, a stellar postseason. That was almost given.
And to be fair, the man played 100-plus games for, what, 8 to 10 years straight?
Yeah. Look.
So it's kind of like, yeah.
But I still enjoyed watching him faceplant. That was fun.
Watching the Laker franchise faceplant was fun. Like, I'm like, okay, LeBron, like, here's the thing. Nothing beats 2011. Like, nothing will beat that moment when they lost to Dallas. So, like, with this, it's just kind of like, oh, we all kind of saw this coming. So it's like people are, you know, getting their kicks in. It's like, okay, cool, whatever. But yeah, it's just kind of like, yeah, we all kind of saw this coming. I am fascinated with the Clippers, though. Like, I may get that same kind of joy that you kind of have watching the Clippers, because
we have been waiting for the Clippers to quote unquote turn it on for the last 2 years. It's just not going to happen, man.
Did they win last night or did they lose last night?
The Clippers? They lost.
Ooh, okay. See, one of the other things about living on the East Coast, it was 10:30. I saw maybe the first 5 minutes of that game, and I'm like, you know what? I'm tired. I'm going to go to bed.
I stayed up late and I watched
entirely
it
logical,
as a psycho.
That's a logical choice. It's real pervert hours. Everyone's staying up until 1 a.m.
Oh, dude. For me, it was like watching the some of the college NCAA tournament for baseball. Like, I'm sitting there watching, you know, the West Coast games. And I'm just like, I'm a real degenerate, aren't I? And then, you know, watching soccer because, you know, you had the game out in Denver last Sunday. I'm like, I feel like such a degenerate, but I'm in my natural element.
Speaking of the degenerates, the Tennessee Volunteers, the supervillains of college baseball, gonna make it uncomfortable for the LSU Tigers this weekend. And
that's a series I'm excited to watch.
Yeah, they'll be disposed of really, rather quickly.
But honestly, it's pretty much all roads lead to Arkansas in the College World Series. I mean,
they should have gotten eliminated.
Team.
Nebraska should have finished the drill. Very upset.
Oh, you trusted Nebraska to finish off the job when they haven't done so in like 20 years in any sport.
I hate Arkansas so much. It's just not fair. They're not fair. Bob,
that's one stadium that I want to go to. Bomb Stadium.
Yeah. Bob, they had this reliever, Kevin Copps. And he is he is, for lack of a better word, absolute bullshit. Because when he comes in, you know it's over. Like, he's given up like 4 or 5 earned runs as reliever all season long. He just comes in and just mows you down. It's just impossible to hit this person.
Is he using spider tack?
No, but this is a good segue and to the spider tack situation.
This is maybe the best segue we've had in maybe months.
Yikes.
Spider tack. Spider tack. Does whatever a resin can.
Does.
Yeah. Is DeGrom using it, Bob, or is it just Garrett Cole?
No. Again, speaking of real pervert hours, I watched a 50-minute long YouTube video in which a very healthy person broke down the ways in which DeGrom has altered his motion in the last couple of years in order to add velocity, and that the ensuing spin rate that corresponds to that velocity is expected for a pitch at that speed.
Mm.
So it suggests that he is not using any of like Lester Tatum's leftover stickum in order to add velocity. He is just awesome and cool and good.
Mm.
Unlike certain people named Brevard Tower or something like that. No, he's not. I really think I am interested to see, like, of all the problems that baseball has, I mean, this is one of them. I don't know if it's the most pressing one, but I definitely think it's entered the national consciousness as the most pressing issue because it's something that they maybe might be able to fix as opposed to all the others.
Well, I think it's just more of like, it's another thing of like, if you're a casual fan, you're like, oh, baseball's got a they're cheating again. The pitchers are cheating now. The pitchers, the batters, everybody's cheating. Like, Stein's stealing. Like, it's just a one thing
they
after another.
Stole all the beer mugs. Every single one of them has been taken.
I'm, said so, Stein, I'm so shocked stealing. Baseball's cheating. Like, baseball has spent, 150 plus years of cheating? Oh, my God.
To a certain degree, and this is going to sound hyperbolic, I blame Pitching Ninja for this. Mm. It's his fault.
Oh, you know what? I'd argue a top five sports account on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
You are correct, Bob.
Now, hear me out. This may sound like a Skip Bayless level hot take, but I do think
in these shoes he can't lose. Bob Silverman, go
right. I do think the fact that the one way in which baseball highlights have proliferated on social media is through the clips of his awesome pitches with where everything is dirty and filthy and nasty and whatnot. And the fact that pitchers, in fact, go to him for tips. It does seem that there's a correlation between this one account dedicated to the coolest, awesomeness, airbendingest pitches, and suddenly, whoops, in the last 3 years, everyone's been like loading their hands down with boogers and using it to torque the ball in all kinds of ungodly ways.
I'm just at a point where I'm like, screw it. I'm not saying you've got to dirty the game up and you've got to. My biggest issue with all of that is if we're going to try and quote unquote clean the game up, you know what it's going to turn into? It's going to turn into, and this is, you know, I don't want to be hyperbolic, but it feels like it's very kind of, it correlates. You know how NASCAR was kind of like, they used the Car of Tomorrow, and it basically just kind of killed any type of edge that a team, that a race team could have? I feel like that's what it's going to turn into for baseball. Like, everything's going to be entirely too sterilized. And it's just not going to, like, the game is tough to watch anyway. And you're going to try and sterilize it with pitching and no, just don't touch it. Just who cares? Like,
my point isn't about like the integrity. Like, you know, look, every single sport, when you establish a set of rules, athletes, coaches, management from top down will figure ways to, if not outright break, bend and test the limits
of those rules. Okay, that's bullshit, Bob. That is bullshit.
That's not bullshit.
I'm joking. Okay. I'm joking.
The thing I worry about the only thing that concerns me is the entertainment factor. And baseball isn't fun to watch right now. It really isn't. And I don't know if getting rid of the sticky, which is why I said that it's become a number one problem, because it's a problem that they could probably tamp down on with a good solid, like, 3 or 4 mound visits per game or ball checking, not to be rude. And 2 or 3 guys getting caught.
Raising.
It could probably at least stem the tide for a bit. I don't know if that solves the problem of the game being less entertaining. I really don't.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't solve that. No, not at all.
So, I mean, look, for all of this year, the pitcher talk that we've been having this year, I believe runs are plateaued from where they were last year. No one's hitting for average. Everyone's striking out. But the amount of runs scored per game, and I didn't check before the show, so I may be wrong, there isn't a precipitous drop. So if the point is more runs are more fun, or we want more excitement, or we want more variety, I don't think will eliminating some of the weirder goop-inflected pitches help? Maybe. But the problem is it's just not fun to watch baseball most of the time, except when DeGrom is pitching because he's good and cool and awesome. He's pitching tonight, by the way, fans, if you want to check out a Mets-Padres game. Sounds like fun for everybody. Who doesn't love the Mets and the Padres? Fernando Tatis, Jacob DeGrom.
Is Francisco Lindor hitting above 230 yet?
No. They gave him he got a bad case of Roberto Alomar, Carlos Baeza.
What a great investment by the Mets. Because
he's very smiley. He's chipper because... and he picks up everyone's spirits.
I think of the New York Mets.
Look, the man spent more than that on a freaking Giacometti, okay? I don't care about blowing through some of Steve Cohen's wet hedge fund billions. That is entirely fine. I don't care. I don't care if he hits 230 for the rest of his 10-year career. I would like him to not.
I hope so. I mean, Jesus Christ.
He's had a robust 217. He's hitting 375 over the last like 9 games.
Well, the Braves they just refuse to catch up. Like Austin Riley's hitting now, and Acuña and Freeman have been good, but like that's about it. Like it's just been a season from hell.
Yeah, maybe don't promote Acuña right now. Maybe later. Maybe just take a step back from Acuña.
Wait, why would I not be promoting Ronald Acuña, my Lord and Savior, Ronald Acuña?
Oh, Ronald Acuña. Oh, sorry, I thought you said Acuña.
Oh, no. If Ozuna is ever in a Braves uniform, I don't know if I can watch. Like, I think that's one of the, like, he should be banned for life. I don't know if y'all have gone through the police report on that. That feels like forever
ago. I read it the night it came out. So I saw the story. I was like, oh, that's bad. And then, like, 5 minutes later, I want to say either Passan or Rosenthal shared the report, and I read it. I was like, oh, that's very bad. He should never be allowed in Major League Baseball ever again.
Like, they walked in on it. Like, it's open and shut case. Like, it's over. Like,
yeah, he done.
Yeah, which also just paid him a lot of money this offseason, so I don't know how that works. But
great investment.
Yeah, not great. But Bob, are you ready for your CFB Minute?
Yeah, I'm going to get some more coffee. You guys have fun.
Okay. And then we'll do our picks of the week when Bob returns with his coffee and ask him about what kind of coffee he made. Andrew, CFB playoff expansion is coming. How excited are you to see Notre Dame get blown out earlier than expected?
Wow, that's adorable. Oh, by the way, Chase, when's the last time Tennessee...
can't lose when you're not in it, sir.
You know, so... All kidding aside, part of me is like, yeah, awesome. You're finally expanding the playoff. You've still got, I'd say, 3 or 4 issues you need to fix so your playoff isn't a complete catastrophe, if that makes sense. I think everybody, every conference, if physically able to, every conference needs to play 9 games. And I say that because everybody was thinking that I was attacking Georgia on social media the last few days. Wasn't trying to, but if you take last year, because everybody's using last year's model as a sign of hope for Power 5 or for a group of 5 schools. That's cute. That's adorable. This is not a freaking Disney movie. That shit ain't happening. But I look at Georgia, and I was making the point to somebody. I said, okay, look at Georgia's schedule. What's their best win? Their best win is Auburn. Auburn, kind of meh throughout the season. What did Georgia do against Alabama and Florida? They got blown out in both games. They would be in that playoff. Is Georgia one of the 12 best teams in the country? I think we can all agree, no. But they would have been in the playoff last year. you expand that to a standard 12-game season, you're going to see teams that started out, you know, in the top 10, top 15 to start the season, and they're going to have, you know, one or two games where it could really help with their ranking. They're going to lose that, but it's going to, you know, they're going to have the small, not meaningful, but they're going to have, or not meaningless, but they're going to have the small, minute wins that kind of keep, that sustain your top 10, top 12 ranking. So you're going to be in the discussion still. That's the problem that I have with the 8-game schedule when it comes to teams in the SEC. And it's not just an anti-SEC bias. It is everybody having the same starting point and everybody getting the same, like, if we're going to have the same starting point, have the same finishing point. And that's another reason why I say kill the AP poll and the coaches poll, because literally you have a poll to determine a playoff. You don't need the other two. And you start the poll and you start the playoff poll first week of November on a Sunday. ESPN's biggest issue, because they're pretty much running this, is you have 2 days in between. You have 48 hours in between your final games, and then you release the poll or whatever. So you're going to have that, you know, that politicking and all of that. And it's like the one thing that you need to get rid of when it comes to when you expand this playoff is the politicking. Like, or at least minimize it, because it's never going to go away. That's why I say release it on a Sunday. Have the votes public. Because explain, why do we have three group of five schools just kind of chilling outside the top, 14? Because we really don't care about them. I'd rather you guys hear that than you guys, than the chairman stumble through whatever's going on. I like the playoff, but there's some things you need to fix. And everybody's laughing about Notre Dame's, the quote unquote Notre Dame rule for the playoff. You're telling me that if a Notre Dame team is undefeated and a conference champion with one loss gets in as a top four, yeah, okay, that's probably not going to happen. Other than that,
it depends.
If it is Oklahoma, probably. If it's a group of five school, yeah, okay.
That's not happening, no.
Yeah, I mean, that being pretty much being a non-starter, and everybody's, Notre Dame needs to join a conference. There's this thing in America that we kind of sort of love called capitalism. Why would Notre Dame want to say, we got screwed out of a playoff, let us go take less money? Cool. Awesome. I'm not worried, especially when 2025 hits and you're going to have massive conference realignment. Why would you instantly join a conference? It's like, oh no, we've been pre-screwed. No, you haven't. Nobody's ever been pre-screwed. I mean, unless you're a group of five school, but whatever. no, it's fine. I wish it was either six or eight, because I think we're widening the pool and we're giving too many teams chances, but not fixing the internal issues. Oh, and by the way, the number one thing you need to fix, actually pay the players, because if they're doing a 17-game schedule into mid-July, and then juniors, sophomores, and freshmen are going to be turning around in a matter of weeks and doing off-season conditioning, pay the players.
Well, I think it's the NIL has got to be just in and normalized by the time.
Right.
This is 2023, I think, when this.
Yeah, but
effect,
also, so. If you're going to do that whole NIL thing and you're going to have these hearings and stuff, actually have student athletes a part of them. That would kind of, it's kind of like men discussing women's rights and women's reproductive rights and governing laws without actually talking to them or having them, giving them a say.
Yeah.
Like, that needs to, like, they need to have student athletes, whether recent or current. You need to have them a part of it, because if you don't, it's not going to end well.
Yeah, I don't know what is ultimately going to come from all of it, but I do think the pay the player stuff will never happen. Like, I don't think. So the NIL is the best case scenario for a lot of these schools and different states drafting their own legislation. Like, that's the best way around it. But I share your concerns on the 17 game season for some of these guys, what that will do. But I do think it will increase interest late in November, expanding the playoff, where it feels like more teams have a realistic shot. When Iowa State,
it's regionalized right now.
Yeah,
it's regionalized right now.
But I do think people need to, like, I think the results will continue to be the same. The Clemsons, Bamas, Ohio States, it doesn't matter.
Oh,
they're still going to run
through. And
parity is not increasing with more teams, and I think people misconstrue that. Like, the March Madness just did a 68-team tournament, and the two finalists were the number one and number one overall seeds. Like, that was it. Like, the two best teams
and
made
people,
it through.
Yeah. Well, and somebody made a great point on Twitter today, talking about, you know, how the Super Regionals are perhaps some of the best, you know, postseasons that the NCAA puts together, because literally it's settled on the field. You don't have, I mean, you have a committee who puts the tournament together, but you aren't, it's not manufactured. And I think that's the biggest issue that we have with, you know, playoffs in college and pro in this country, where it's, we want to manufacture the magic, when the best part of what makes these moments, you know, iconic and memorable, and all, you know, playoff runs and Cinderella runs, is they happen organically. But the NCAA, and much like the NFL and the NBA, you know, partially, and Major League Baseball, they're trying to force that. They're trying to manufacture these magical moments by giving the little guy a chance. Like, there's nothing wrong with that, but when you aren't doing it organically, it just comes off as fake, and it comes off as, okay, so, you know, you look at the group of fives. Congratulations, Coastal Carolina. Congratulations, Cincinnati. Like, you're going to take the highest group of five champion. More than likely, they're going to be sitting in the 12-11 spot. Like, there's nothing magical, or, like, we're giving them a seat at the table that doesn't feel organic. It's kind of like, here you go. Like, go away. Like, and people, you know, are using the 2020 model, where it's like, guys, the Pac-12 literally did not know they were playing football for like 2.5 months. Like, the Pac-12 wasn't included on that. I feel like it's going to work, but we need to kind of tamp down the expectations of this, you know, great awakening for the little guy. No. They just made the.
Yeah, this is all pool to get them from antitrust lawsuits. This is to.
Oh, for sure. And the issue for, you know, for the bigger schools is everybody's chasing Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State. But the thing about it is, you've just increased the race to chase the Oklahomas, the Notre Dames, the Floridas,
yeah,
the Georgias. Like, you just increased that, which is awesome. But you aren't really doing anything to lump those group of five.
What I would do, because they're not playing for the same trophy. Friend of the pod, Radio Wyatt, former Mississippi State quarterback, pointed this out. Just like, yeah, South Alabama and Alabama are competing for the same trophy in the year. It's like, no, they're not. Like, what I want is group of five to do their own playoff. Like, that's what I want.
And that's what's probably
going to
end up happening. Like, 2025, you know, and I keep saying it on here and on Twitter, 2025 is the year that basically it's, hey, what 60-plus schools matter in terms of making money for college football? This is who matters. This is who doesn't matter. Like, it really sucks that we're basically telling the group of five to go away, but you're not exactly providing a service for us. Like, look at Alabama's schedule. They're scheduling home and homes with all of these Power Five schools, mm-hmm. and they're going to sprinkle in their, you know, their group of fives whenever. Nobody cares. Like, nobody cares about the group of five. Like, I know it sucks to say that, but nobody cares. They're basically throwing them a bone so they can just go and shut up. Nobody cares about the group of five schools. It sucks to say
Love
that.
Action.
It sucks. You know what the funny thing is? If Cincinnati goes to a group of five bowl or goes to a New Year's Six bowl this year again and maybe goes undefeated, yeah, they're probably going to jump to the ACC in a few years. Or
no, the Big 12 is going to swoop. The Big 12. Well, I don't understand why we do not have Cincinnati and Houston in the Big 12.
As somebody who covered that whole saga when they were like, yeah, we aren't going to create a network because we aren't sure about the digital footprint, and pretty much told Cincinnati, Central Florida, South Florida, and Memphis and Houston's like, hey, we really don't need you guys right now. Yeah, no, they definitely need them. Yeah.
Cincinnati would be a good get. I think Houston would be a sleeping giant in the Big 12.
They should. Well, Houston would be great, but there's this thing called the University of Texas, and I think Texas and Oklahoma are going to go, and this might be a hot take, they're going to go independent in football. I could absolutely see it happening.
Hmm. Well, we'll have to see. We'll have to see. Andrew, what is your pick of the week?
Pick of the week for me is going to be, for viewing purposes, it's going to be Euro 2020. I'm super excited about that. For reading wise, I'm reading the Ben, I want to say Gulliver.
Yes, friend of the pod, Ben Gulliver of the Washington Post.
So
and
he has a
very good NBA podcast that we should also point out, The Greatest of All Talk.
So he has a book out regarding the regarding his time in the bubble, and I am super excited to read that. I read like maybe the first few pages and before I got caught up with work and stuff, but I'm super excited to really dive in on that and read about his experiences.
Yeah, I think that's definitely going to be on my list because I want to go read that. I am reading West of Sunset. Have you read that before, Andrew?
No, what's it about?
So it's a fictional perspective on the last few years of F. Scott Fitzgerald's life in L.A. By somebody who studied and knew a lot about his life and his family life and his situation. And because it was a really sad ending for him in L.A. and his wife being in a mental hospital. And just dealing with that and like his personal problems and everything. But it's a very, very good read. I'm also reading, front of the pod, Pete Carrada's NBA book that is escaping me right now that I'm almost finished with. But
is he really a friend of the pod if you don't know what his book is about?
I know what it's about.
What a
it's
jerk.
About like this. I'm trying to think. It's not because you. I'm just trying to think of what it's actually called. It's not The Revolution Was Televised. It's basically the same kind of thing, but for the NBA, of how the NBA blew up. But it's really good and a lot of stuff.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Hang Time or something like that.
Maybe. Well,
Pete Prado.
Yes.
Is it because it's about like the early days of the NBA becoming like the big kind of
yeah, like a lot of insight into Larry O'Brien, and I didn't even know a lot of stuff with Larry O'Brien.
Oh, that's a great book.
JFK.
That's a tremendous book, by the way.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. Bob, what is your pick of the week?
Yeah, what? If everyone hasn't read it already, there's a long form profile of the Nets, but mainly Kevin Durant, in the New York Times that I highly recommend.
Is it by Stein?
No, Sam Anderson.
Okay.
It's quite good. It does feature about 1,000-word lead about the creation of the universe. So, you know, that's just my jam. Just 1,000 words of throat clearing that eventually gets you back to Kevin Durant's theories on the universe and everything.
I don't know if I want that.
You'll read the whole thing. It's very long.
Kevin Durant, I forgot
who
it was.
And as we all know, the longer a story is, the better it is.
Your long story. You're a big long story guy.
Being edited. waiting for it to happen. Okay. Should be soon.
What's the story about Mr. Silverman?
We'll discuss it off here. We'll talk about
Sweet.
It.
Sweet.
Yeah, and then are y'all going to dive into Loki this weekend at all or no?
I've already watched
Big fan. Big fan.
I watched
it's
the
good.
First one. It's... How can I explain this without getting too spoilersy? There are the contours of a much more interesting show present in what I've seen in the first episode. I highly doubt that that's the direction that Marvel will go, but it will still be fun to watch.
It's yeah, I think more than Falcon Winter Soldier and WandaVision, we're going to start sewing threads, much more threads.
Yeah, I mean, there's...
And for Phase 4. I think that's the thing
Marvel
that I like about it.
Requires every single element to contain so much connective tissue to the next three or four installments, as we've discussed on the pod, that it's very hard to do something entirely original. I would say, look, I think everyone knows that of the entity called the Temporal Variance Authority that is, having Loki jump through all these hoops. I don't think I'm too spoilers alert to say that time travel and multidimensionality is a big feature of this. I think unless it turns out that the TVA is the big bad, I'm going to be disappointed.
Mm.
They are the big bad.
I'm oh, yeah, sorry. They absolutely are. I don't know
if they will be. A well-made show would realize that the notion of a singular timeline being controlled by faceless bureaucrats is bad. I don't even think it takes a well-made show to come to that conclusion. They have to be the big bad. And then it'll be an interesting show. I don't know if Marvel's extended commerce apparatus will allow that to be the case, but I'm going to be surprised.
I think part of it will be. I
like the apparatus. I like all the Mad Men, hat tips and '60s mod aesthetic. That's all fun
yes.
for me.
I do like
Owen Wilson. He's
yes.
fun.
I do think that the whole and this isn't like a spoiler thing, but I do because I think they talked about it how. The whole multiverse theory and we're going to basically see a bunch of low-key multiverse stuff. If you haven't figured out that that's not a spoiler and you're like, oh my God, you spoiled it. Jesus Christ, pay attention. I do think that we're going to see a much more sophisticated...
Look, Ant-Man 3 is called Quantumania.
Right.
And the Doctor Strange is called Into the Multiverse of Madness. This
right.
is clearly where they're setting up shop for the next spate of Marvel movies.
Right. Well, what I was going to say was like it's going to be much more entertaining than and I think much more impactful than the whole a white Vision. Really? that was it?
Look, as someone who if you collected West Coast Avengers in the 80s, that was a shocking moment.
I get it.
I tipped to John Byrne there.
Right? No. I understood why it worked, and I appreciated
throwing,
it.
It was throwing a bone to the comic book dorks. You have to satisfy the comic book dorks.
No, that's fine. But it was just kind of like, oh, that was it.
The idea that the Scarlet Witch, the traumatized Scarlet Witch, is actually the most powerful entity in the universe is incredibly cool and interesting. And then they just ended it with a big tooth-tooth fight, and she could leave the Jersey town that she held hostage and tortured with no repercussions.
Yeah,
that was lame.
That was lame.
She's the most powerful being in the universe, and she's humanity cannot stomach her presence because clearly she can warp all of reality with a thought. She then has to leave,
and she's off to read her books. Oh
yeah.
Yay!
Yeah, she then gets. I know that perhaps Elizabeth Olsen's contract makes that very difficult to pull off, but again, you're dealing with these things like the plot negotiation and franchise tentpole needs often run contrary to good narrative fiction in whatever
because you become DC if you do that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll put a pin in the Marvel versus DC debate until next week. But
best movie is Aquaman.
That's a fact.
I can't be doing any of that. For that guy up there.
Have you seen Orm?
Bob Silverman for that guy in the Midwest. Technically in the East. Still blows my mind that Detroit is an East Coast time zone. Andrew Hammond of the Detroit Free Press for myself down here in Knoxville, Tennessee. That is all we've got, sir. We'll be back next week. Thanks, guys.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.